Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Wednesday, October 30th, 2013, at just after 2 UTC as we're recording this. I'm Sam Minter, and once again, Yvonne Bo is with us. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, 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 everybody.
I hope you've had a lovely week.
Yeah, actually, I did. I had a pretty good weekend. I took my son on Saturday to a place called the Young at Art Museum.
Okay. Is it like a kids museum kind of thing?
Yeah, it's full of mazes and things and all sorts of things. It's enormous. Actually, yeah. we only were able to cover, we were there for a couple of hours. We were really able to cover like such a small portion of it, to be honest with you. He had a blast. he was moving, crawling, and I don't know. I went in there and I was actually going to meet a friend of mine, and I happened to actually meet a couple of other people I knew with their son.
Well,
at the same time. So yeah, so I don't know. We got a
Contrast here, everybody's been sick. So fun That's, stuff, you know.
Lovely.
The usual, you know. You'll get more of that once he's in school.
Yeah, I know. As I've seen from all my other friends that have kids that go. Well, actually,
yeah,
you know
what?
He's
sick,
going.
But then he brings it home to everybody else, and they get sick.
He's been going to school three times. Actually, twice a week.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
Not sick yet, though.
Oh, cross your fingers.
Yeah. You know. So.
So anyway. We've got a show. Oh, our real topics for today, by the way, are all the spying stuff. There's been news announcements on that and things going on. Obamacare. There have been more developments and people, you know, talking about various bits of Obamacare stuff. And then Apple stuff. There were a bunch of Apple announcements since we recorded our last show and conversations about that as well. So those are our main topics. Before we get into that, I just wanted to mention two things real quick. One, we got a couple pieces of feedback. One from our loyal listener, Matt, basically saying that he enjoyed our conversation on innovation and he likes it when Yvonne and I actually disagree. Meh. So thank you for the feedback, Matt.
Yeah, and we can try. Yeah, but we're not going to turn into crossfire. It's all nice.
Yeah, although, you know, I think, Yvonne, you know, I can just make a point of, you know, usually when you're saying stupid things, I'm like, oh, okay, Yvonne's saying stupid things again. I could make a point of, like, always
I could do that too.
Telling just, you how stupid you are.
Screw you too. Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
there you go. Like, you know, none of this listen politely and, okay, maybe you have a point. No, no, none of that. None of that. You are full of shit, and you're obviously a fascist.
Oh, that's funny. I kind of like that, actually.
There you go. I also wanted to mention that our other loyal listener, Bruce, when we talked about the innovation stuff, tweeted back and forth with us a little bit, mentioning a number of people that he thought were examples of innovators who were not dicks. He also pointed out to me that I had mentioned something along the lines of, oh man, I should hold on, I gotta get this right. I had talked about, you know, when I was talking about innovators and some innovators are dicks and what happens to the non dicks and stuff.
Okay,
like
Sam,
that.
I gotta stop you. The sound on my end is just I don't know. The sound quality's been going all over the place. I don't know. It's been great, terrible. It was a disaster. I couldn't hear anything you were saying.
Okay, well, let's take a pause. We'll be back in just a second. Okay, we're back. So anyway, I, as I was saying, and hopefully Yvonne's audio quality is things will stay better. But I had been talking about people who are dicks and people who weren't dicks, and apparently at one point I said that in a specific way, and Bruce pointed out that he doesn't think anybody would be appreciate being called a non-dick guy.
Yes,
okay. I get the
point. Yeah, I can see how some people would take that the wrong way. Yeah.
Yes, so perhaps we should have, called them assholes instead. I don't know. The conversation was prompted by someone who used the word dick. Or another way to put it, if we want to avoid all of those kinds of words, people who aren't nice. Anyway, so moving on. Topic number one.
Oh God, no.
What?
What, you're gonna do McLaughlin?
Well, you said we couldn't be Crossfire.
Issue one.
So of course, and McLaughlin was the original inspiration for the show way back when, too. Yeah. Anyway, spying stuff. So the biggest new thing, and I mean, and there's been this steady drip of NSA-related stuff for months now. The stuff that's blown up over the last few weeks, really, and especially in the last week, is basically us doing eavesdropping directly on the leaders of various countries, specifically countries we're relatively friendly with. The biggest ones that got attention were first Mexico, well, first Brazil, then Mexico, and then most recently Germany, where Angela Merkel, what is she? President, Chancellor, Premier? What is she?
Oh God! I think she's the Chancellor.
But Chancellor. Leader of Germany. Apparently, we were bugging her cell phone.
It is Chancellor. That was
Chancellor. Correct. Okay. So a bunch of countries are very much protesting at this point, talking about being upset about this.
Then this afternoon it came out. By the way, all right. And of course this was said by the U.S. government. So let's take it for where the source is. Well, okay, at this point, that apparently the governments of France and Spain were aiding in that spy.
Let's separate a couple different issues because they came out at the same time. There's also the issue of the mass collection of phone calls from the public of these countries. And that's what the U.S. This afternoon or Tuesday afternoon came out and said, look, the reports that we're tapping these millions and millions of phone conversations is incorrect. What those numbers actually include is not just things that we do ourselves, but also information collected by friendly governments and shared with the NSA.
Right.
And so, you may have, in some cases, it was implied that, this is France spying on their own people and sharing it. In other cases, it may be France spying on Germany or Germany spying on France or the UK spying on Germany or whatever and happening to share this information with us.
Right.
That's separate from the tapping of the leaders' calls. So there are two different issues that are being protested by a lot of these countries. A is, hey, you're monitoring tons of phone calls of our populations at large, and presumably other communications too. I'm using phone calls in this case as a shortcut for all kinds of communications. And this is actually something you have to be very careful about when you read what's being commented on something. Like, if they say phone calls, they mean phone calls. And they don't even necessarily mean the metadata about the phone calls. If you say phone calls,
the phone call,
they mean the phone call. And so you got to be careful about wording. But in general, I'm speaking about the broader sense of collecting stuff. So you've got that, and then you've got the, hey, you're spying on the phone calls and conversations of the leadership specifically. And those are two separate issues, but they're both being protested. On the tapping of Merkel's phone and stuff, there's been a minor kerfuffle here because Obama's Obama came out and said he wasn't aware of it until blah, and it's stopped now. And then there's the denials that we haven't said we're stopping it. And meanwhile, the NSA is saying, well, actually, we did brief the president on this. So there's some infighting going on here, because a number of people in the intelligence community who are being quoted anonymously and stuff are saying essentially that they're feeling like the administration and various folks in Congress are throwing them under the bus.
Yeah, because I'm gonna guess that they didn't do this without somebody consenting to this.
Well,
is
so
what I'm guessing.
What is typically said in this is that specifically if you talk at the president's level, it's right. Kind of like a don't ask, don't tell thing. They get intelligence reported to them in like the president's daily brief and such, saying, you know, Merkel had a conversation with this person, and this is the conclusion that was reached. And the president doesn't say, hey, wait a second, how did you know this?
How did you know this?
They're just, okay, they had that conversation.
Well, but the thing is that, I mean, look, we've had two administrations. I was reading that some of the spying didn't just start. I mean, listen, a lot of the spying. Forget
started
about it.
Under
even
Bush.
Like,
yes.
But even like before that,
well,
okay.
Look,
This has been like the ongoing data collection.
Well, let me make the larger point that you've made before, Yvonne, and that a number of people are saying, and I forget one of the intelligence community people I follow on Twitter started, I guess, two nights ago, doing a series of tweets where they said, "Breaking news! You heard it here first. The U.S. spies on."
And everybody.
Albania, Algeria, Ababa, and then they went through every country in the world in alphabetical order. You know?
Right.
Because, you know, the counterargument to this, and in fact, the people from the intelligence community, I believe, who were testifying in front of Congress earlier today, said specifically, look, this is what spying is. This is our job. This is the NSA's job, is to spy on other countries and figure out what they're doing. And that includes figuring out what the leadership is thinking.
Right.
And this is what we do. This is our job. And you know, you've made this comment before, like, should anybody be surprised that any country is spying on any other country? And if they can figure out a way to listen into what that country's president is saying,
that they wouldn't do so?
That they wouldn't
do so? I mean, you think
so?
The Chinese are not trying... I mean, you think the Chinese would try to figure out on listening to every other leader in the world? Or the Russians? I will say this, okay? Look, here's one thing, okay? Talk about separating a couple of things. One's the constitutionality of something or whatever the government's doing versus the appropriateness of like the US government going out there and actively going and trying to gather as much information from everybody, whether they're allies, friends or foes, in order to make certain decisions. And you know, shit, these guys are good. What the fuck you want me to tell you? Okay, all right. You know, they're out there and they're trying to gather as much as they can. And fuck, if they could hear the damn conversation they're having, apparently they had no compunction in doing so. Now, listen, do we want to say that we don't want to do this to certain levels? Do we want to back off and not do it? Do we want all of a sudden the Chinese to be able to listen to some of our conversations so we're not actively trying to do that, or any other foe for that matter?
Well,
I don't know.
And this is where I think there are the two different issues, like I said before. That's the mass collection of information, and there's a targeted collection against specific people that we're interested in.
Right.
And I think these are two different arguments. Now, I would probably end up on the side of we should be doing a lot less of this on both counts, but they are two different arguments and two different sets of things. In the mass collection of information, there's just the general thing of, do you believe in the philosophy of collect everything and then search through it for suspicious stuff, or do you believe you should only?
I don't.
Right.
For example,
I don't either.
I do believe that there's got to be, for example, while we may have the capability to tap into a lot of information, I think that the problem that we've got right now is that there are not enough safeguards or things is saying, hey, we have suspicion of this, and we need to put a request to gather this information. Why? And somebody needs to review it, and there needs to be an advocate at the other end that goes and it goes and says why you couldn't do it or why it's not, you know, there's got to be far more controls, and the controls that have been there are just not good.
So, you know, I'm on the side of the folks who say that the widespread dragnets are just in general inappropriate, and that we should be very targeted. Like, if you're doing intelligence at all, it should be targeted against a specific individual, and you should have proper legal authority lined up specifically to target that person. And I frankly don't care if they're an American citizen or a Guatemalan citizen or an Algerian. I think you should have essentially the same process and the same safeguards in place in all those cases when you want to target that person. Now,
I understand them developing the capabilities, but there's got to be far more controls than there are on these capabilities, which is what we've talked about before, which is like, for example, how people at the NSA were even spying on their on the people who they were their lovers, they were doing stuff and whatever. Now, that was not appropriate.
Now, I heard the congressional – I heard little snippets from the congressional testimony today. I didn't listen to all of it. But in one of them, one of the intelligence community folks – and I forget which one. I'm sorry basically said, if you did what I just suggested, where you only do the only do targeted and you don't do the broad sweeping, he said that it would essentially neuter the program and make it ineffective. And I'm like, okay. But
I actually don't agree, because I totally disagree.
You don't agree that it would neuter it?
No, because I know for a fact, okay, that all the major telephone companies have processes that they actually store this information that they're looking for, and they have processes to process requests to go and return that information to the government when they are trying to do something. So therefore, the answer is no.
To play devil's advocate, what he said, and this was very specific, is that the reason why he felt it would neuter it is because these systems are not used to find out information about a specific individual they're already suspicious of. This is a mechanism they use to generate leads. So they're looking on a whole across the whole network for certain patterns that look suspicious, and then they'll use that to find the individuals that they want to target for more specific investigation.
Okay, then there has to be a process, a methodology, and a series of safeguards how that happens.
See, and I would say,
if you're going to argue that point, then tell me how the hell you're going to do it without going over those bounds.
Well, see, I would say that you can't do it without doing those bounds, and that's something you just shouldn't be doing. You know, you get your suspicion from somewhere else. You shouldn't be doing a dragnet monitoring absolutely everything in the world you possibly can monitor, and then, you know, searching for suspicious patterns. I think you need to start with the suspicion, and that it's improper to be doing this in the first place. Now, even if it was actually effective, but I think as more of this is becoming public, you're seeing more and more reports that, you know, they're doing all of this, and yeah, they've generated a few leads, but very few of them have led anywhere, and the few that did, they actually had other evidence that led them there anyway without this. So I have serious doubts as to whether
way too much information, man.
Like, if you're doing the cost benefit analysis, you know, I have serious doubts on the benefit side. I mean, I think there are significant costs in doing this. And so even if you were going to argue that there are just these incredible benefits and that this is awesome, I just don't see the argument there that it's actually providing all that much benefit in the first place.
It's just way too much information. Okay,
do your point.
It's just way too much data.
Yeah.
Okay, to really be effective unless you're actually searching, like you mentioned, for something specific. It's just way too much fucking data.
So, now the other side of this is the targeting of individuals in the leadership of places. And I think, like, you've got, like, if for instance, if you've got a clear enemy, like, you know, we're at war with Hitler, and we're trying to see if we can bug Hitler's bunker to find out his plans. I think very few people would argue against that in, like, a wartime situation with a clear enemy, blah, blah, blah. I think it gets fuzzier as it gets less, as you get to friendlier people. Like, first of all, we haven't had an actual declaration of war since World War II. Trivia question, the last country we declared war against was actually Romania. But anyway, we haven't actually declared war, but there's certainly countries that we're more and less hostile with. And I think you'd find a lot of people saying, okay, you're trying to spy on Assad. Okay, whatever. But once you get to folks that are clearly, quote unquote, our friends, it becomes less clear because again, we've got the cost benefit analysis here. Like, what are we trying to gain? We're not protecting ourselves against German terrorism. We're maybe trying to get a one-up on negotiations for trade negotiations or something else like that. And are the stakes high enough to justify it, given that there is this huge downside if we're found out, which is what's happened here. But also, I would argue, we shouldn't be making policy in general on the assumption that this is only good if it remains secret forever.
Well, let me point out one thing. Okay. A number of people have mentioned that the European outrage has been, I don't know what was the word that was used today.
Fake?
No, it wasn't fake. It wasn't fake. But that it was like, it was...
Hypocritical?
No. It was controlled anger.
Yes.
And it was European leaders chose a measured response to the latest round of disclosures about the NSA.
Well,
and I'm going to guess it's because they know that they're doing a lot of similar shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that this is the answer here. I mean, first of all, they have to be incredibly outraged because their public is outraged, so they have to mirror that. But I think the reality is, you know, those at the leadership level, first of all, they know that they're doing it too. And second of all, they know that there's sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Everyone knows everyone else is doing it kind of thing. And so they'll be upset. They'll try to gain some political advantage of it out of it. And maybe they'll push through some of these mutual no spying agreement things as cover. And then everyone will spy anyway.
oh, God.
But. Yeah. You know, look, I get back to, we had this conversation a number of months ago where it's sort of the difference of, well, everybody does it and we'll be put at a disadvantage if we don't, versus, hey, let's just have some principles about it. Like, you know, if we believe this is wrong, then let's not do it. Even if it would give us an advantage. And even if the other guy is doing it, let's be the better person or be the better country and just say, okay, we're not going to. Or we'll only do it in certain circumstances. I mean, like, okay, we'll do it with our enemies, but not our friends. Okay, you still have a question of, okay, well, is Egypt a friend or an enemy? Is Russia a friend or an enemy?
I think the problem becomes, like, everything becomes right now. It's just that, you know what? Listen, look, acts in life depend a lot about on the judgment of people and how they execute certain things, okay? You know, I could go out almost every day and you could do so much stuff that would be unethical and just piss off people, okay, to no end, for my advantage, right? Okay, but do you do that? No, because, I mean, well, not just because of just because you're pissing off people, but just because it's just not right, okay? Even if you did gain an advantage in one way or another, I think that there's got to be a certain point where, okay, look, we all have the capability to do a whole bunch of stuff far beyond whatever, you know, we should do. There's got to be a point where we just got to say, okay, great. Okay, we developed these capabilities, perfect, but there's got to be certain sets of controls or whatever and certain jurisprudence and judgment as to when we use it.
Yeah, okay? I mean, and all right? The basic idea here, like, okay, you know, we have a core set of allies, and basically we're talking Western Europe. Right. I mean, and you could argue a few other countries, but we've got a core set of allies in, you know, Western Europe, NATO, et cetera, who we are theoretically friends with. And I think it's perfectly appropriate to say, hey, guys, Let's sign a mutual non-spying agreement.
Right.
We're all friends here. We're above board. We're, you know, if you got something to say to us, say it to us, you know?
Right.
And have that kind of agreement in place with these kinds of things, because, you know, to have a friendship relationship, you have to have a level of trust, and that trust is immediately undermined if you're doing things like this.
Right. Right.
And, you know, and you can have a separate argument about whether it's okay, you know, to spy on Belize, you know, or China. But certainly with this core group of people, I think it's unwise. And even if they're doing it right back to us, I mean, we had, you know, Jonathan Pollard spying for Israel, and Israel's one of our quote unquote closest allies, you know. And but I think fundamentally, I know it's so naive to think this way, but more and more as I'm looking at these various things in international relationships, whether it's this or the drone program or whatever, I'm like, you know, can we go back to like the golden rule? Like, let's not be so inconsistent on this. Like, if we're asking, is it okay for the U.S. to do this? Imagine if it was China doing it to us. Would we be okay with it? And if the answer is no, then we shouldn't be doing it. And this goes for spying. It goes for, you know, killing people with drones. It goes for whatever. Like, you know, I don't know. I know it's naive. I know it's naive to play the, you know, well, if it's not okay for Iran to, if it's not okay for Iran to do it, why is it okay for the U.S. to do it? But frankly, I think that's, in the end, that's the ideal we want to go towards. And I know we're not there, and I know we're not anywhere close to there, but I feel like that's what we should be striving towards, is not thinking, well, this is okay to do because it's us. But if anybody else did it, then, oh, they're evil. I don't know.
Well, anyway, all right. So we beat this thing to death. All right.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back and we'll talk about Obamacare. How's that?
Ah, good idea.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, we are back. We are back. It's very exciting.
Woo-hoo-hoo, we're exciting. We're so excited. I'm tingling.
You know, meanwhile, in the background here, we're recording this on, you know, what local time is Tuesday night. It's Wednesday UTC, but it's local time Tuesday night. And on Tuesday nights, my wife has class. So usually we don't do this on Tuesday nights because, you know, Alex. But his sister is watching him right now. And in between us talking, I hear from the, you know, through the walls, I hear yelling and no and ah and all kinds of things going on, because I know there's like chaos going on downstairs, and I see like texts going by, you know, from Amy asking my wife, when are you gonna be home? Yeah, so anyway, fun stuff.
Fun.
So Obamacare. We talked a lot about the website troubles last week. There's some new issues, but did you have anything new on the website? I know you mentioned that in our.
Well, I guess what they mentioned today. Well, I think in the last week it became apparent that the problems obviously have not been fixed, and that they don't expect them to be fixed until late November, and then they've delayed some deadlines because of that fact that they just can't get this thing fixed anytime soon. I mean, I'm still, you know, I've done software rollouts projects. You've done that too. Yeah. Okay. You know, when you're going into testing only 2 weeks before millions of people are going to be using an application, okay, I mean, what the hell was going through these people's brains?
And
how could they delude themselves into believing this thing was going to work?
Oh, and by the way, this is another example. We talked in the last segment about sort of the Obama, oh, I didn't know we were spying on Merkel. Yeah, right, whatever. But the same thing here. The word is, like, nobody told Obama and the cabinet-level people that there was a problem.
Apparently, they weren't. There was a whole bunch of articles that I was reading about all these rah-rah presentations that were being given.
About how everything was perfect and how it was ready.
Oh, yeah, everything's working fantastic. It's going to be great. October 1st is going around, and I'm like going, really? I mean, these guys just could not bring themselves to say, hey, we're super behind.
And look, this is something where, you know, you mentioned that both of us have done rollouts, and both of us have done at various times. Thank goodness I'm not a people manager anymore. I'm only, like, project and other stuff I'm doing, but I have dotted lines all over the place, but no solid lines anymore, and I'm quite happy about that. But anyway, we've done these kinds of rollouts before, and one of the first principles in project management in general is if you've got problems, if you're behind schedule, you surface those damn issues as soon as humanly possible.
Hell yes!
So that expectations are set appropriately, and if management needs to change plans, adjust things, whatever, they have plenty of headroom to do so. The one thing that you never, ever, ever, ever do is get up to, like, a week or two before launch, let alone after launch, to say, oh, whoops, we have a problem. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you're surfacing and raising red flags about and all that kind of stuff months and months in advance. As soon as you know there's an issue.
Or listen, like, I've done in a rollout. I had a rollout with an application, like, years ago that had, listen, I knew it had issues. So what I was doing was I did partial rollouts to certain places to see, telling full well people that we had issues with it, to see if they could help with going through it to see if we could iron out the bugs. Okay, all right? Because I needed more testing, okay? Right. I needed more users to do testing. I just, yeah.
So you got some, they did, you volunteered some guinea pigs, but they knew they were
basically,
guinea pigs.
Basically, yeah. But they knew that we had issues with the data, okay? So I said, listen, I need you guys to go edit, and I need you guys to tell me what the hell the data are, because I put all this stuff in a database, you've got the application, you're looking at it, but I can't tell if it's right or not, okay? All right? So I need you guys to go in and tell me what the issues are. Boom. As a matter of fact, we have to axe the whole rollout. The data was all messed up. Bottom line, we never used it. Right. Okay? When you're doing a rollout that, like this, for example, one of the things that you do, I was just going through this where you do this acceptance testing where, listen, there are companies out there that you hire and they write the test cases and they write code in order for you just to test, okay? Okay, you've got a fully integrated system that's supposed to do all of these things. Great. Let's test it, okay? Let's see how it performs. Let's see how it performs under a load. Let's see how many people we can put on it and see if it works, okay? And if it fails those tests, then you say, shit, well, it's not working. Dude, if they started doing the tests 2 weeks before the fucking rollout, that means – and apparently, since there was no one contractor apparently in charge, okay, they just – you know, it was just – I mean, this thing was just a walking time bomb.
Yeah.
And I will say this.
And I have read there were some people involved raising red flags, but they weren't the ones that were in the right positions to get attention to that, and they were basically ignored.
Listen, I remember about 12 or 13 years ago, must have been, it was around year 2000, where HP rolled out a new they rolled out a brand new e-shopping site, okay, all right? And they rolled out – HP hadn't rolled out under automatic, like, financing. And they were offering, like, 12 months no interest or something like that, which at the time nobody was doing. So this is when I was working at HP, and we said, great, let's try it out. Dude, we had, like, I don't know how many people at the office try to go online and apply for credit – the whole system wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't process anybody's application. I remember that we finally, well, since we worked at the company, right? I mean, we were like, what the hell's wrong with this thing? So I started looking at who the hell's in charge of this thing, started making phone calls. So he said, dude, do you know your application doesn't work at all? No, it should be working fine. I'm like, should be working fine. I'm looking at the damn screen. We're all sitting here trying to freaking log on to do, you know, because they had apparently some deal for employees or whatever. And we were like trying to get, we're trying to do this stupid thing. It doesn't work. It doesn't, these guys rolled out something to a whole public that just did not work. 4 weeks later, they pulled the plug on the whole thing. Just pulled the plug. It didn't work. You know, I think in organizations, when they're big, when they've got people, they've got this go fever, they have a deadline, they got to do this, they tried it with a couple of things here, it'll work, let's just put it out there, whatever, you know, oh, there's some little issues, don't worry about it. You get a lot of people that just love to cover up shit and not fess up to the fact that shit is seriously wrong because some high-level executive, you know, thought that, you know, was saying that we got to have this ready and we're going to go, and they're like scared to go and say, it's not working.
Right.
So,
and that's the thing. If you've got a culture of fear around that kind of stuff, you're screwed. You need to have a culture where it's okay to raise your hand and say this is fucked up.
Or you don't have one person in charge, which is the other problem.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean that doesn't help either. I mean, like there's so many like the problems here, you know, people are going to write textbooks about this, about yes. all the things not to do. You have the no clear chain of command. You have a culture where people weren't able to say that there was something wrong. You had a hard fixed deadline that was mandated by law that couldn't be changed.
Right.
You have requirements being changed over and over and over again.
Over and over and over. But people that were not working on the damn project and they didn't understand the implications of changing the damn requirements.
Right. And I mean, and by the way, they're. You know, I come from places where you know everything's about agile and being able to change requirements quickly and on the fly and stuff. And there is certainly a place for that, but it has to be done in a controlled way. But what it sounds like happened here is sort of willy nilly changes late in the process, and that doesn't fly.
On a software development project, when you've got a design that's already written out, okay, when people keep doing willy nilly changes, okay, all right, that substantially alter the operating way of that, you cannot be doing those. I mean, it's just never going to work. You're never going to have a working product.
Yeah. Enough about the software side of things. The other thing that in the last 24 hours, I've heard a coordinated push on this. So I gather, and not to take away the legitimacy of the actual issue behind it, but I gather there was a coordinated effort where a bunch of Republican conservative types, you know, essentially said, okay, on Tuesday, we're all going to start talking about this aspect of things. And, you know, that happens on the liberal side too, and I mentioned it on like gun control issues. It was happening last year or earlier this year, whenever. But anyway, the thing is, everybody's been hammering on Obama's statements about if you like the insurance you have, you'll be able to keep it. Whereas what is actually a feature of the law is also setting a minimum standard for what has to be in a coverage package. Correct. And so a lot of people who had coverage that was less than that level are indeed being kicked off those plans because those plans will not be able to continue to exist. And so we've got lots of people playing clips of Obama saying, if you like your insurance, you can keep it. If you like your insurance, you can keep it. If you like your insurance, you can keep it. And saying, what about these? Yeah, and I gather the numbers are in the range of a few million people are indeed not able to keep their insurance.
Yes, that is the case. That's what it seems like.
And
now, here's the thing that and because I've seen the clip, I saw the clip today that said that. Because I saw him say, and I'm trying to figure out when he said what.
Well, the thing is, he said variants of that.
Exactly.
Dozens and dozens of times.
Yeah, he said variants of that. And
The like, one thing that's in common, and I will completely grant the critics here, there were no caveats there. There were no, you will be able to keep your plan unless blah, blah, blah. No, he was hammering home over and over and over. He said the three major tenets of Obamacare for any law that he would pass, and I forget what the other two were, but one of them was if people have plans they're happy with, they will not have to change. That was one of his three major tenets.
I know, and I keep wondering, like, because here's the thing, right? Think about it. I'm an insurance company, right? Yep. Shit, I can change a plan whenever the fuck I want. You can't keep the plan just because you like it. I had a health plan I loved years ago. Fucking insurance company canceled it. I feel like somehow, for some marketing of the whole thing, he said this thing that just wasn't true.
I mean, because like, look, I mean, there are a number of ways you could finesse truth out of this if you wanted to be legalistic about it. Like, you know, okay, well, you know, that plan, quote unquote, continues to exist. It just will cost features, 5 times as much.
Or no, it's just the certain features of it change. We added this, this, and this,
and made it cost more.
Right.
You know. So yes, it's the same, quote unquote, but it's not. You know, and the thing is, you can't defend yourself with that kind of bullshit reasoning, because even if you can find some sort of technical way it's true, you know that's not what people thought you meant. You know?
That's right.
I will often defend people on legalistic wording, you know, saying, well, that's not what he said. And like, and Obama is another example of it. In the 2008 campaign, I don't remember how many times I yelled at people, at liberals specifically, saying, well, what the hell did you expect, when they were complaining about this isn't the change that we thought we were going to get. When if you actually read his speeches carefully and read his books, the change he was talking about was never implement some liberal agenda. It was always about trying to create an atmosphere where Republicans and Democrats could work together better. That's the change he was always talking about. It's just that's not what the liberals wanted to hear. Now, of course, that change hasn't worked out very well either, because the Republicans haven't cooperated with it. But he was never talking about implementing some big liberal agenda. I think it's an even bigger stretch here, because even when you do carefully read his words, it certainly sounds like, you know, people aren't going to get kicked off their plans. If you have something you're happy with, you're going to be able to keep it. And yeah, okay, maybe if an insurance company is saying that, sure, you can keep your plan, it's just going to cost 5 times as much and isn't going to cover the same things as it used to. It's a really stretch. It's a stretch. I don't know.
I know what I will say is this. What he said, the way that it was put out there, because it was a very simplistic message that he sent out, it was just not accurate.
Yeah.
It just was not. Okay. I heard him say
maybe in the early days he thought it would be accurate, and then in the course of actually passing the legislation, it changed.
Right. Because I heard him say at later statements where he said he changed it.
Yeah.
To you're going to be able to keep the features of the plan that you currently have. It was said like that, right? Because I heard this one the other day, and I was like, so wait a minute, I'm hearing this one, I heard the other one, and I'm guessing that it's got to be that at some point he was saying that, and then they realized, oh shit, that won't work. So then it turned into, you'll keep the features, which, that's what's happening with those plans. Those plans, they have a lot of the same features, however, because they don't meet certain minimum care standards, they basically had to add a whole bunch of stuff. So, it doesn't make the statement he made accurate. I mean, it certainly doesn't make it that's not what was said, and that's not what actually was legislated. And I mean, let's face it, the legislation, as it turned out, was so freaking complicated. I mean, shit, I got to tell you, it took us really until this year to see it in action to really understand what the fuck was in the damn legislation in the first place. Because you and I couldn't explain it. I know I couldn't.
And I certainly didn't even try to read the damn thing. And of course, you know, most of the people voting on it didn't either. And that's normal for legislation. So let's not, you know, go too much into that. But, Yeah, I don't know. I think the people who the million or so people who are going to get a negative effect due to this particular aspect of things are certainly right to be upset. I certainly understand that. But the flip side of this is when you look at any plan like this, there will, of course, whenever you change anything, there will be some people who are benefited and some people who are worse off.
I can say that I personally are going to benefit humongously as far as I've been able to tell.
Okay.
Okay, for example, for our coverage, for our household, and how much out of pocket we will pay next year versus this year, it looks like we're going to save a ton of money.
And that's not because you're going to buy something through the exchange. It's because your existing plan is modifying in response.
No. Because we're being put on a corporate health exchange.
Right, but that's your company doing something. It's not you going to the individual exchange.
It's basically operates very similar to that exchange.
Okay.
Except it's a corporate.
Except your company is deciding what to do.
I'm trying to understand what the hell the difference is with the public and that one.
In any case,
the same subsidies, it's not the same pricing.
The important part is that due to side effects of the law, your company is changing your healthcare plan in a way that looks like it will be beneficial to you.
Substantially, yes.
And, you know, I haven't looked at the individual exchanges yet. I suspect, I believe my wife looked at it and said she doesn't think we qualify for a variety of reasons. But I'm not sure if what she meant was we didn't qualify for the subsidies or whether there were
You wouldn't qualify for the subsidies because you work for a company that provides coverage.
But I think we should be able to still – we wouldn't qualify for a subsidy, but we theoretically could still shop on the exchange. It just might not be a good deal.
Yes. It just would not be a good deal. What I got from my company was that, yes, you could shop on the exchange, but we guarantee you that what you're going to see on ours is a far better price than what you're going to see from the public exchange.
Yeah, and I suspect that's what I'll see. Because, of course, the target audience of these exchanges is for people who are currently uninsured.
Right.
You know, it might be interesting from a curiosity point of view for those of us who have health coverage through our employers to take a look, but we're not the intended audience. The intended audience are for people who are currently uninsured to provide new alternatives that they did not have before. Because previously, if you wanted to buy insurance on an individual basis, it was extremely hard to even find where to look, let alone actually buy something. I remember there was a brief period where, you know, I had left Merrill Lynch and I had yet to go to my next job. I was on my severance period and I was kicking back enjoying the fact that I was getting paid for doing nothing. But you know, I there was the whole, do I go on Cobra? Do I try to find something else? And I remember at that time spending a few minutes looking around to see, oh, well, okay, if I buy something individually, what can I do? And I couldn't even find good information on it, let alone go further.
You know? It used to be literally impossible. I had like my brother who they were self-employed trying to buy a plan. The hoops that he had to go through in order to get an individual plan that cost a reasonable rate was insane. I mean, this apparently he had to provide to the medical plan a fully documented health history for I can't remember what period. Okay, all right, of time. For each one of his family members.
Right.
It was bonkers. Okay. All right. I mean, the requirement. And after he was able to provide all of this stuff, then yes, they did underwrote him on a plan that had some kind of reasonable rates. But yeah, I mean, it was before, it was just crazy if you tried to go and like get healthcare on your own anytime that you would be out of a job. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and so the main thing is it makes all that easier, and that's what the exchanges are really for, not for people like you or me. But anyway, yeah, so some people will be better off, some people will be worse off. That's the nature of these things. And the question is, on balance, are you making more people better off? And are the people who are worse off in a tolerable way?
I think the problem, a lot of the people that are complaining about their plans, okay, were people that had plans that were problematic at best, okay?
Because they covered almost nothing.
They covered almost nothing. Okay, all right, and they thought they had, and this is something that kept happening with people where they had these plans that covered almost nothing, and people thought they had coverage, and they were paying like a stupid amount of money, and then the day that they actually needed healthcare, they realized, oh shit, this thing doesn't cover anything, and it's just it was these super bare bones plans that, for the most part, are the ones that are a problem. So I understand why they're frustrated, but yet at the same time, these people didn't understand that the insurance companies were taking their money, and you know what? They weren't going to give them anything in return. And it, because it was really – those plans were, for the most part, from my opinion, they were a fraud. So I
don't know if that's about him to say anything.
I did a little research on that and found out what the caps were. The maximum benefits that they paid were very small. You paid a very small fee, and it wound up that when you exceeded the amount of coverage, it was like, okay, you're done, you're out, you don't have anything else, that's it. And you were like, wait a minute, I've been paying insurance. Nope, we only pay up to a certain amount, that's it, you're done, you're out.
Well, this ties in also to the notions of the whole logic behind the individual mandate and everything, because the people who would pick a plan like you're talking about are the people who feel, I'm young, I'm healthy, nothing's going to happen to me.
But here's this goes back to even the original argument of Obamacare and why the mandate. That's what fucking people driving say too. Okay, oh, I'm a good driver, nothing's going to happen to me, right? I don't crash, no problem. And you know what? Yet in the 50 United States, we force people to buy insurance, okay? Auto insurance. And the reason we do that is so people like me, who would have insurance no matter what, if it was mandatory or not, don't wind up paying for these assholes, okay? Okay, you're gonna need it. Auto insurance, you're gonna get into an accident. Something is gonna happen. It's not impossible. I'm an excellent driver, and I've still gotten into accidents. Okay, believe me, it happens. No matter how good you are, you get sick. No matter how freaking healthy you may be.
Well,
okay?
and you know, even if you don't get sick this week, you know, someday you'll be 65, 70 years old. And
you will be sick.
And things will be happening to your body that you don't necessarily appreciate. I was going to say something and I lost it. I suck. Go ahead.
It's just what it is. But it just goes back to the original argument. Listen, bottom line is, I mean, this has been a mess. It's just a ridiculous mess. I just, you know, this whole thing this last couple of weeks. I mean, but like I said, the funniest thing is the Republicans are going to be having a field day since the beginning of the month, right, with this.
Yeah, they could have been a month into hammering on Obamacare.
Right. And they wasted all of that time.
Yeah, and now, I mean, I guess they still got, you know, a week and a half or whatever of it so far, and they'll probably be more. So the longer this goes on, the less important the missing those first couple weeks are. But right. I think they had a golden opportunity here.
Oh yeah,
like we were saying at the beginning, no one was jumping up and down saying this is going to crash and burn the second it goes out. But you know, oh, what a missed opportunity! What did they get for it?
Not much. Actually, what they got is that they started in a hole in order to go into this pounding. They've right. dug themselves a massive hole, okay?
Right. In terms of general levels of support for the party, I will point out, on the flip side of that, though, I think we've talked about this briefly the other week, for some of the leaders of this, you know, the Ted Cruzes and those folks, Ted, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think so. Yeah. They don't care about their popularity amongst the general public. They care about their popularity within the small group of people who are really enthusiastic supporters of their position. You know, they're not running for, you know, even if you look at Ted Cruz going forward, he's not really running for president. He's running for the Republican nomination. And there's an entirely different dynamic at play when you go into that kind of thing. Or even if you say, okay, he's not running for president, he is. But even if he's not, you know, he's running for the support of his party in his district. You know, and it's a very different dynamic than if you're actually trying to get the general support of a majority of the American population.
No, I know. I know that they're not targeting that, and I get that. But it's just my frustration goes back. This goes back to even like one of the reasons why I voted for Obama in the place, first place in 2008. I thought maybe we could move past some of this and try to nope. work in a more not gonna happen. No.
Yeah, I mean, and you know that's you know, me too. I mean, a lot of it was about, you know, hoping for, knowing that he wasn't actually this super liberal guy, but he was continuously, like, half the ideas that he listed in his book were cribbed from Republicans.
Right.
The healthcare plan was created, was modeled after something that came out of the Heritage Foundation and was first implemented by Romney, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, before he was even nominated, the Republicans made clear their strategy for the first 4 years, certainly, and now continuing on to the second 4 years, is we're just not going to let anything happen.
Yeah.
We're going to obstruct everything we can.
Well, and they've done 8 years of this. Listen, let me tell you something.
Well, they have done eight by the time
they will done. Eventually do 8 years of this unless Obama dies before the end of the term. Okay.
I wouldn't stop then. You think they'd suddenly be cooperative with Biden?
No, that's what I don't know. Well, I can't guarantee they'd be as whatchamacallit, as extortionist. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Hey, go ahead. We're not anticipating that outcome. Go for it.
We're not anticipating that outcome. Okay. We're going to think he's going to live out the whole term. Okay. You know, I don't feel that this. Well, listen, the Republicans don't have a plan. They don't have a strategy. They're a reverse splinter group right now. They have two massive groups. Like right now, even more information has been coming out how business groups are just really frustrated the hell out of what happened like the last month. Okay, how they are withholding now funding. How they are actually going out and actively trying to back anti-Tea Party candidates in the Republican Party. I mean, this has not been a something that has solidified the Republicans against the Democrats at this point in any fashion. As a matter of fact, I'm saying flat out that it's weakened them substantially. And you know what? These bumps and hiccups and complaints about this stuff about Obamacare, what I think was, you know, more than a hiccup. I mean, serious. They have been issues, but like memories are short. In 2 months, 3 months, you know, whatever, when all this shit is done and whatever, whatnot, we're at the end of the year, nobody's going to give a fuck. That's the reality. The cycles are that short. By the time we get to the midterm elections, nobody's going to give a shit.
Okay. I don't know. I think people will be reminded, but, you know, and the people who care about...
It's short. They're going to be thinking, I'm telling you, they're going to be thinking about something else. Like, as everything happens all the time.
Yeah. No, memories are short. However, the people who really care about these issues, you know, I was listening the other day and
care about these issues are not the majority. It's not a driver of votes.
It is a driver of votes, but it's a driver of votes among the base. And you can't win elections with the base. You have to win elections with the middle. It's not a
driver of votes of the middle.
Right.
Period.
Like, this is the kind of thing that drives out the base and gets people out to vote and stuff like that, and which is important. You can't win an election without your base either. But your base alone, and this goes for both parties, isn't enough to win. You have to grab the middle.
Today, for example, just to give you how the Republicans are just, I don't know, they're saying screw you the middle. They went and like Marco Rubio today backed out of his own
plan
for immigration. Paul Ryan backs out of his own budget, and Marco Rubio backs out of his own frickin' immigration plan. Jesus Christ. Those people have no idea they will stand up for? None of them? I mean, that's what's driving me crazy about them. None of those are – they are so scared of pissing off that group so much, they will not stand for any idea. And that's depressing.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, as I've said earlier, I would love to actually see let's just get the breakup over with, you know, and then we can have, you know, a tea party that really is coherent and believes what it believes 100%. And then you can have the other part of the Republican Party, or maybe it's more than one part that, you know, it has its set of beliefs. And let it work itself out and compete on that basis. And of course, you know, if we actually had a Congress with three active parties or more, the dynamics become very unpredictable. It's a very interesting situation, but of course that's what I like about it. Like, I like that kind of chaos. It's fun to watch, but we'll see. And usually that kind of chaos, by the way, is only a transitional state. It'll last for a few years and then things will settle themselves out again. But anyway, I think it's time to move on.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about Apple. We'll be back after this. Okay, we're back. Apple announced a bunch of stuff. Completely different topic.
Apple.
So let me start with, because I know you have less to say about this part. So I'm going to start off by Apple updated Maverick. That's a new operating system.
Mavericks.
Overall, I love it. I love the multiple screen stuff. I use multiple screens on my computer at home. And it should have been like this from the beginning, you know.
I don't use multiple screens. So what is it that they added to the multiple screens?
The two significant differences are, one, your menu bar is on both screens.
Oh, that's nice.
Not just on one. You can have a menu bar for it's the menu bar for the app that's on top. So you can have the menu bar like right now at this very second. My left screen has the menu bar for Safari and has Safari as the top app. My right screen has Skype and the menu bar for Skype.
Nice. That's nice.
So that's number one. Second was they fixed some stuff with how it worked with full screen mode. In the last version of the operating system, if you put an app into full screen and you had multiple monitors, it would put it onto full screen on one monitor and then blank out the other monitor.
Ah.
So now nice. you can separately, like, you can have an app in full screen on one app on one screen and then have normal windows in the other, or you can have two full screen apps, one in each monitor. So nice. That's very nice. So I like that. It's got some other things. It's a lot of little features, no big headliners, but I like most of them. There are a couple things, like it has one that tries to better balance the amount of processing time goes to the foreground app versus the apps in the background to sort of maximize the responsiveness for whatever you've got up front. And that does seem to work very nice. Like, my computer, you know, is a 3-year-old computer at this time, and it feels noticeably more responsive on Mavericks than it did. So I'm very happy about that in general. However, it did screw up. I have this software that every day generates a time lapse from my webcam, it's a little bit screwy because it's not properly balanced. Can't you give it more priority? What?
Can't you go and like set a certain amount of priority for that one separately?
I haven't yet explored. I'm sure there are ways I can deal with it. The way it's supposed to happen is the app developer makes some changes to tell Mavericks what kind of attention it needs, but the software hasn't been updated, so it doesn't do that. So basically, the time lapses are actually more interesting than they used to be, but very long, because it'll sort of have, instead of just having snapshots, like that I had it set to maximum speed was once every 2 seconds if I was doing all kinds of stuff, and like much less often, like every 5 minutes if like it's dark and nothing's going on. But now it like will actually take if there's motion, it's actually almost like video for like a couple seconds. So it's actually it was actually kind of fun to watch. Like, you can see me picking my nose at my computer and stuff, but
great.
But, yeah, exactly. Very exciting. But it's not quite what it's supposed to be. But my biggest complaint, like Mavericks as a whole, that's a very minor complaint of a very esoteric usage. As a whole, it's wonderful. It's a nice improvement. But it also updated. What? They also updated a whole bunch
Let me just say one quick thing. Yeah. For me, the biggest thing that I've noticed is that Safari is far, far, far
more faster
than it used
to be. Oh, faster?
And more stable.
Yeah, because it used to, Safari would crash with, had all kinds of issues with tabs not loading. And
yes,
and blah,
multiple
blah, blah.
Tabs.
They've apparently fixed all of that kind of stuff, which is awesome.
Yes.
But the other thing, they updated a bunch of apps like GarageBand, iPhoto, iMovie, Pages, all of these kinds of things. And apparently a lot of them were top to bottom updates. So like, for instance, iMovie and GarageBand are ones specifically that I've tried to use that I've noticed. iMovie, I don't use all the time to like actually assemble new movies, but I like every time I do home movies, I load them into there as just, hey, here's the place I keep all my home movies. It's got an entirely new interface, entirely new ways of doing things. Several things that I had used before are not there anymore in terms of how it imports and separates things into days. So like if I imported a bunch of movies at a time, it would automatically separate them into events one day at a time. It's not doing that anymore. You could scrub across things and it would show you the timestamp of when you recorded that thing. It's not doing that anymore. So they removed some features there. Now, apparently in all of these, one indication that Apple knows it's a big change and it's not fully feature complete is they left the old version on your disk. So you could still access the old version. So it didn't wipe it out. So like if you actually relied on features that have disappeared, you could still use the old version.
Now, understand that this whole thing goes with the fact that I understood that almost all these apps are now free.
Yes. Well, my understanding is they didn't remove features to remove features because it's free. They removed features because, like, for instance, iMovie, what is their professional? Is it Final Cut Pro?
Final Cut Pro, yep.
So essentially, they threw out the code base that used to be iMovie, and instead, it's essentially Final Cut Pro Lite.
Oh, okay.
And so it's like they're taking the pro version of their software and stripping out stuff to make the new thing rather than continuing off of their old code base. At least that's what I gather. And same thing with GarageBand, which is what I used to use to put together these podcasts. They've got a professional audio editing suite as well. I forget what it's called.
Yeah, I forget what it's called. I know what you're talking
about. It costs $300 or $400. It's an expensive program. It does all kinds of advanced things. But they threw away the old GarageBand, and again, it's a light version of their pro software.
Okay,
and
so that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense, and it's probably a better place to be in moving forward. But in the process, they stripped out a bunch of stuff. So in the case of GarageBand, they stripped out all the podcast features. It is now 100% a music editing program. You know, so
interesting.
So it's great if I was doing a song. Or whatever.
Sing a song. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah. There are plenty of songs that I use as the breaks between this. People have heard quite enough of me. but anyway, and I guess that's not strictly speaking. You can do other audio things, but it's clearly very oriented towards, you know, I'm mixing together a song or a short snippet of something. It's no longer like there are a lot of things that were specific to podcasts that were taken out. And it actually wasn't those that hung me up, though, because I was like, you know, look, in very early days of this podcast, I used the quote unquote podcast track to make what they call an enhanced podcast, where you add additional information to it, and like the little picture that shows up in your iPod or whatever changes depending on what we're talking about. Like I had it, if you go back to the very early episodes of Curmudgeon's Corner and play them, I had this thing where it flipped back and forth between your face and my face depending on who was talking.
Right.
And it was something that GarageBand did automatically. I stopped doing that because it was kind of a pain in the ass and stupid after a few episodes. So I haven't used that in a, so I'm like, okay, I don't miss that feature. I'll use it anyway. But like when I tried to import the audio that we record off of Skype, it was just like, and I couldn't figure out any way to undo that. And the audio files themselves were fine if I just like listened to them straight off the disc. So I knew it was something weird with the software. Anyway, so I started exploring other editing software to put things together. And the one I came, the one I did the last week's show on was, it got the job done. It, you know, you can tell it didn't have the polish of like Apple's UI. And there were a lot of things that were like, really, I can't click there to do this. I have to right click and do this. And it was kind of goofy, but anyway, so I'm kind of annoyed, and they did leave the old versions of the applications, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't want to use the old version of an application that's clearly a dead end. You know, if the software is not if the software is not going to support my use case going forward, I'll find some software that's still being actively developed that does, because I've been in that position before where I've had a piece of software that I relied on for something that hadn't been updated in so many years and the developer clearly didn't care about it anymore. And then guess what? Eventually it's going to stop working. And I would rather than scrambling at that time, I started looking for alternatives now.
No, I hear you. So bottom line is they changed the applications. They made a whole bunch of changes. But the one thing that I found about – now, remember, Mavericks came out and it was free.
Yeah.
They had charged for every other upgrade up until now.
Yeah, I mean they used to be hundreds of dollars. Then the last few releases have been like $30, $25, $30. And now it's free.
And now they free. But not just that they did that free, but they've decided to do practically almost every other application basically for free. Okay. Yeah.
By the way, before you go on to this new tangent, I just want to say, you know, despite whatever complaints about I have about like iMovie, iPhoto, whatever, the complaints are from somebody who is using the old version for a very specific purpose and using very specific features. For a new person getting their Mac today, and these were updated in conjunction with iOS updates too, so people using these on their iPads and stuff, you know, it's going to do what it does, and it's going to do it very well. Right. Unless you are doing one of these very specific kinds of things. So I think it sets them up good for updates into the future, and they're still a very good solution for what they're intended to do for the new person who's coming on board and using them for the first time. So anyway, go ahead.
It's very good that you actually pointed that out, because the whole point that I think that they were trying to do with this is that they're trying to provide, together with the hardware that you're buying, a complete ecosystem of software. Okay, and they have decided that, you know, Apple has basically, what I feel is, reverted to the old model, which is basically, if you go back long before the dominance of Microsoft, okay, and as that dominance has been waning substantially over the last time, I mean, software was the king. The people who made the hardware, they just made generic stuff. Okay, right. Apple has decided, screw this. We make hardware, or we make money selling the hardware. We're going to make the software to enable us to sell more hardware. Okay? We're giving everything away. The hell with it. All right? And that is a significant strategic shift, okay, that, to be honest, what it looks like to me, and if you heard the keynote, okay, Tim Cook took a significant jive against Microsoft during the keynote when he announced all this stuff last week. It's also a massive swipe against Google as well.
Uh-huh.
Okay, both at the same time. Google has gone out, they've created the software platform basically almost the same way as Microsoft had before, okay, and you know, they've given all the software out there for free in order for enable other people to build hardware around it. But think about this, what they've done right now. Google doesn't really make money on all this stuff, and right now they have a very small hardware presence. Now Apple said, fuck this. We're just going to make our own software, we make our own hardware. We're just going to give away the software, to hell with it. That creates a problem for if you're trying to now go and charge for the software. It's kind of difficult when Apple's decided, screw it, we're just giving it away. Yeah, you're going to
say, new upgrade for Windows, $100 or whatever. How much was the last Windows?
Because they dropped their prices. Let me see. Windows 8. Let's see how much pricing. Let me take a look right now.
Of course, the answer part of that is, of course, most people, unlike the Mac, where everybody's like, ooh, upgrade. You know, a lot of Windows machines, whatever's on them when you buy them is what's on them forever.
But still, they sell a substantial amount of light. No, they do. It's not, you know. I mean, they do sell a substantial amount of shrink licenses. I mean, I've bought it. Let me see. Which edition of Windows 8?
I actually haven't passed before.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Look, okay, this is complicated. You go to CDW, okay? I'm at their website, and I'm looking at – I went to try to just find the price of frickin' Windows 8, right?
And Windows 8 Pro full version, $187.
$187.
$199.99 list price. I found it at $187.83 at a prominent internet retailer.
Dude, that's a lot of money, man. That's a lot of money.
Oh, and I mean, that's the full version. The upgrade is only $87.
Only $87.
Interesting. List price is still $200 for the upgrade, but its actual pay price is much less.
Well, okay. So think about this, right? Now, but the thing is that the hardware manufacturers have to pay Microsoft also for a license. I mean, it's just I think that Apple did this in order to basically it is a strategic frontal attack against both Google and Microsoft. Okay, I'm giving away all the fucking applications. I'm giving away all the fucking software. You know what? You guys don't sell hardware. Beat me now. Okay. Mm-hmm. You got to go with a Microsoft. You want to go with Windows, you got to buy Office. You got to buy this. You got to buy that.
Right.
You got to
buy all this shit. They can make the argument that says, okay, fine, their crappy computers are cheaper off the shelf.
Right.
But to do anything with them, you got to do this and 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 this. And meanwhile,
you
get your iMac out of the box and it's got all that already.
And with upgrades.
Right.
Software upgrades.
The other thing, and I was thinking this, I don't know whether they'll do it for the next upgrade, but now that they've made it free, I can't imagine it'll be more than one or two macOS upgrades before the upgrade is exactly the same as you get on your phone. You know, the upgrade has been downloaded into background. Install?
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, whereas right now you still have to go to the little app store and download it and wait for it and then do it.
No, I'm sure that's where they're moving towards. No, I have no doubt about it. But the thing is, so think about this. You're from the Google perspective now. So how do you make money? Okay, either you start making hardware, you start getting into a war with whoever the heck's doing our hardware, which basically is a lot of vendors, like from even like Dell, HP, whatever the hell you want. So you got to go war with those guys. Or you try to charge for something that somebody else has given away, including other hardware. I think that because of the comments that I heard, it was a significant strategic shift, and it was meant as a front. I mean, this was not a subtle swipe. This was basically an all-out war declaration that they did. And a lot of people just did not see how significant that was. Okay? The fact that they've just basically said, screw it, we're just giving everything away. The hell with it. Fuck it. Let's see what you do now. Samsung today was trying to drum up a whole bunch of people to, like, develop software specifically for their hardware. Also today, it was kind of funny. There was a Wall Street Journal was apparently Samsung has some weird way of like doing public events in which they look like fools. Okay, all right. I don't know. Last year they did something like about 6 months ago where they had some very awkward moments on stage with some performers.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was very bizarre. So today Wall Street Journal just tweeted: Samsung sells 2 TVs every second. Executives spout statistics at first U.S. developer conference. Spout statistics. I heard that apparently they spent I don't know how long spouting statistics in front of a whole bunch of developers and trying to drum them up to write software for specifically for Samsung devices. And I don't know. It just seemed like it was like a big number spout. But who knows? I mean, I don't know. I just thought that was funny. But anyway, bottom line is, you know, look out for what – I mean, I'm wondering what the heck the reactions are going to be by the competitor – by other companies to this, okay? I mean, you're looking at it right now. I mean, I don't know. You've got iWork in the cloud. You've got iWork online. You've got it available from your mobile device. You've got it from your computer. You have storage. You have this entire ecosystem, like, completely available right now. And, oh, by the way, we just made it available for free.
If you buy Apple devices.
If you buy an Apple device. Exactly right. Right. Yes. Well,
and you know, not that those are particularly unpopular at the moment either, but...
No, but the other thing is that you've got to remember that one thing about the system in of itself, think that I mentioned it today, brand loyalty to Apple versus, like, other brands is, like, ridiculous. Okay? Right. It's just off the charts compared.
Nobody cares if they have a Dell or a Lenovo or an HP or whatever, for the most part, unless you have some specialized apps that need it for whatever reason. The most part, they're interchangeable. It's commodity. You go for the one that's the latest price, or maybe you look at some reviews of build quality or whatever, but or you're buying for style if you like what one looks. But for the most part, that loyalty isn't there. You know, you may buy one this time, and next time in a couple years, you'll buy the other one. You'll buy the other one, whichever happens to look better at that moment based on what's on sale that day and current reviews. Whereas, like, when people get into the Apple ecosystem, they're in the Apple ecosystem. It's much rarer for an Apple person to say, you know, I think my next computer, I'm going to get, you know, a Windows clone.
Right. Yeah, and so that's what I think that, you know, you think about it. You built this
now the comparison, of course, it's also harder for people. It's much easier to jump between different Windows hardware manufacturers than it is to go from Windows to Mac or Mac to Windows.
Absolutely. But the one thing that I'm saying about this is that what they're doing is, listen, how do I keep these people, like, in my ecosystem? How do I continue to build this brand loyalty? How do I maintain this revenue stream that is massive right now, approaching $200 billion a year? Well, shit, I got to start making it that it's sticky because I basically give them everything, all in one shop, all for one price. Just get a new device every number of years, and you're locked in. You're in. It's a strategy. I'm going to, you know, see how it plays out. But interesting attempt to see is what the reaction of the competitors.
Apple could go even further down this line. Like, you know, they have, they've got iTunes Radio, but, like,
sure.
you pay the $30 to get it without commercials or whatever. They could $30 a year. Could be like, yeah, you know. We'll roll that into the price of the computers too.
Sure,
you know.
Yeah, I'll get the music for free. Screw it. What the hell?
Exactly. You can do that with all kinds of things. The online storage for photos and stuff. They offer a little bit of that for free, but they could add more and more and more. You know, and there's a cost benefit analysis there, of course. But they if they could continue this strategy, they've also got one of the things Apple has always been known for is relatively huge margins on the hardware.
Right.
They could spend some of that margin on these kinds of services that they just give to anybody who buys the hardware.
Right. In order just to get more users, more market share, more stuff. Look, it's turning the model on its head back to a very different model as before. I mean, listen, before the advent of the PC, that's how it was with, like, you know, with computing, the original computing. I mean, IBM and all those companies basically built, software updates and whatever, it was all free, just buy the hardware. That's what it was all based on. I mean, this wasn't upended until this entire Microsoft Wintel platform came about. And basically, Apple's almost tried to turn this back completely on its head. I mean, it's been working so far. So let's see. But let's see how people react to that. So anyway, thought I wanted to highlight that was a very substantial change that happened last week, and I just don't think people really realized how big it was.
Before we switch to hardware, I just wanted to note that one other Mavericks feature that I was reminded of when I said the next one will just pop up and say, it's available, click here to install. They did add automatic app updates.
Yes, they did.
And system upgrades, whereas before, it was always, you know, yeah, it would pop up and tell you that there were upgrades, but you had to click buttons, you had to go through, you had to do stuff. Now you can, there's a a preference setting that it'll ask you the first time you do an update after you're in Mavericks, do you want to just do these automatically? And I hit yes the second that thing came up. And because now, like, I've had several updates in the background, and it will pop up a notification. It says, such and such program has automatically been updated. Awesome. I don't have to think about that ever again.
I know. I keep getting that on my phone now. It's like one of the most relieved things. I don't have to go and, like, freaking thing and, like, update all. All of a sudden, I would have 20 updates pending. No.
Now, and probably before too long, like, so far, more often on my phone, because I have a hell of a lot more apps on my phone than I do have from on my Mac that were bought from the App Store. The updates happen all the time. So far, I'm still like, you know, every couple days, or actually, who am I kidding? A couple times a day, I go and look in the App Store and say, oh, what's updated? What's updated? But, you know, before too long, I'll turn off those notifications and I won't even worry about it. I'll just know that I always have the most recent version of everything.
I got to tell you, I've stopped looking ever since they started happening automatically, period.
Yeah, see, I still look and I read the release notes and see what's changed and stuff like that. But, you know, that's entertaining for a while, but then it's like, okay, fine.
Well, I did see the Twitter, like, I don't know if you saw that there's this update where you get more graphics in Twitter now.
Yeah, that's whatever. Yeah, I mean, I use Tweetbot anyway. It's a much better Twitter client than the one that's built.
Twitter?
Twitterbot. Okay. Twitterbot.
Twitterbot. Okay.
Tweetbot. Tweetbot.
Tweetbot.
Tweetbot. Definitely. If you're using the actual Twitter app, stop. Get Tweetbot. It's so much better. Anyway.
All right.
It's like $3 or something.
Okay. I'll think about it.
and again, there's some specific features that are in the native Twitter client that maybe people like, but I don't. I like that. The other one's better. Anyway, the hardware. There's an update on one of the laptops. It just seemed like a fairly routine update of the laptop, right?
Yes.
And then there were iPads.
Then there were iPads. A lot of people have been like just saying how incredibly cool the new iPads are.
So now the two things on the iPad. First of all, the full size iPad is renamed the iPad Air. It's thinner, it's narrower, it's lighter, blah, blah, blah. Of course, prompting immediate speculation from a lot of people, does that mean there's going to be an iPad Pro soon? Who knows? But anyway, so the thinner, lighter, full-size iPad, and then, yes, a Retina iPad Mini. And what's interesting about this, too, is not just there's a Retina iPad Mini, it's that aside from the size of the screen, all of the specs between the full size and smaller iPad are identical.
Yeah,
same processor speed, same memory options.
Yeah, I did see that.
Same screen resolution, same everything other
except
than the physical
size. The other one
size.
Is smaller. That's it. Yep.
And so then the only and the Mini's cheaper. And so, like, at this point, you can decide purely, do I like the bigger size? Do I want the smaller size?
Exactly. Do I want
specs
a bigger screen?
Specs are the same. You don't have to compromise on anything. It's not like the smaller one is also slower or something.
No.
So, like, for me, if I had not bought mine last year, no question whatsoever, I'd get the Mini. But, you know, to each his own. If you like the bigger one, great. Get the bigger one. You don't have to compromise on the specs at all. So, like, that, you know, and then weirdly they kept around the iPad 2, but, you know,
well, it's for the cheapskate that wants an Apple.
I know, but, like, couldn't they have done, like, the instead of keeping around the iPad 2, keep around the last version of the full size iPad? Like, instead of being
there's
one
more margin on the iPad 2,
instead of being one generation behind, it's like three generations behind.
They have more margin on the iPad, too.
I know they do. I know. But anyway, so these look great. Like, I feel so awful that, like, well, I don't feel awful. I've been incredibly thrilled with my iPad. But, like, I'm not going to buy another one just a year after I bought the first one.
I at some point, I got to get a new freaking iPad. I have a first generation iPad.
Oh, yeah. Screw that. You know what you're getting yourself
for
Christmas.
It still runs. I can't upgrade to 6 or even 7. We still use it a lot. I'll tell you this.
You got to get yourself one of these for Christmas.
No. I'm not going to do that. It's not in the budget. No. Okay. We're gonna listen. I will say that what I will say is that that damn 3-year-old iPad, we're still getting plenty of usage out of that darn thing. Okay.
And actually, people have commented on this. Apple making stuff that the replacement life cycle is getting into 3 or 4 years or longer. And it's like, well, they're going to have to do something about that because, you know, you want these people to replace their devices every couple of years, right?
Well, but I actually saw today somebody complaining about the opposite, about planned obsolescence, that I was about to go and, like, slap the person who wrote the article because I realized, I was looking at something related to, like, the original Motorola Razr. It came out in 2004. I recall that I got three of those phones in a span of, like, 2 years because they would break or something or whatever, okay?
For those of you who haven't been paying attention so long, like, back in the day when, before the iPhone, when I liked Trios. That was my smartphone of choice.
Sam liked the Trio, my God.
I went through, like, 6 Trios in 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And it was because, like, they would break. Something would happen to them. And a few of them were, like, clearly my fault. Like, I dropped one in the pool. You know, okay, fine. Still, that's not Trio's fault.
I had a friend of mine who just dropped his iPhone in the pool. It still freaking worked.
He just had good luck, because that doesn't usually happen.
No, it's not. Listen, I know that that's not the normal case, okay? But he did, and it still worked.
Okay. All right. But anyway, yeah. These things would not last very long before. Yeah, so.
And so the one thing is that, you know, we're going through a cycle right now. Listen, my last iPhone 4S, it's 2 years old. Listen, I got rid of it because the battery life on the telephone was short, but it still works. As a matter of fact, I've just basically, what I did is I you know, it's not connected to the cell network anymore, but, you know, it's on Wi-Fi. I'm using it so my son can... Yep.
We did that with the exact same thing for Alex. There are a couple of our old phones that don't have cell service anymore, but are theoretically his. Now, the reality of it is he likes to use ours more than he likes to use the ones that are quote unquote his, but, you know, whatever.
But when he can't use it, I mean, I've got, you know, I got his videos loaded on there and all other stuff over and games and whatever. So whenever he needs to, wants to play with it, he's got, you know, he's got that. And that phone is over 2 years old.
Well, and speaking of that, like, you know, we were talking about upgrading and how I'm like, I can't upgrade after only a year. My wife actually, when these came out, said, okay, so you want to give your old one to Alex and buy a new one? And I'm like, yes, I really want to, but no, it would be stupid.
No. I'm just, I try to.
There may be iPads, you know, in the Christmas stockings for certain people around here, this year. Probably not the super high end one, but, you know, but something like, we'll see if we do that or not. But, because right now, like, we share the one I have, is used. It's probably used just as much by Alex as it is by me. And, and Amy, has said, before she saw mine, she was like, I don't want an iPad. They're stupid. As soon as I had one, she's like, can I have an iPad? So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But these are nice new devices.
Well, okay.
These are nice new devices.
All right. And on that note, I think that they're very, very nice new devices. They've gotten, like, very, very positive reviews. Between the new iPhones and all these devices, I mean, a lot of people, like, there's been a lot of positive sentiment.
I will note the big thing that people pointed out that a lot of people thought would surely be there. The new iPads do not have the fingerprint sensor.
No, they do not. And I was surprised that they didn't. I'm going to guess that it's probably a supply issue.
So I would be shocked if the next revision of iPads does not have the fingerprint sensor.
I'm sure it probably will, but I'm going to guess that it probably was a supply issue, given, like, the type of device, the sensor it is. That's my guess. But the other part that surprised me is they didn't announce a new Apple TV.
Yeah, that surprised me too, because I was waiting, because we got Amy a TV for her room for her birthday, and I was going to get an Apple TV along with it, but I was like, okay, there's one.
Maybe they're going to announce a new one.
Maybe they're going to update it. Maybe they're going to update it, and everyone was expecting an update, and it didn't happen. So I'm probably going to go grab her the old one.
But it's still so overdue.
It's still overdue. It's got to be any time now, and it just wasn't ready.
I agree. But I'm like, look, I want to listen. I still have an original Apple TV, and I listen. There are certain things that Apple TV will not do. Okay, all right. Mainly, the main thing is I can't mirror. I can't show from the phone or whatever. It just doesn't have mirroring. It doesn't matter whether you hack it with the software or whatever. It just doesn't do it, period. Right. Bottom line, there's just no – so I want
– And for those who don't know the term, it means put your computer screen up on the – or your iPad or your iPhone screen up on the TV.
Right, and it just doesn't do it. So
That's another Mavericks feature. In addition to just mirroring, you can use your TV as a second monitor.
You can use your TV as a second monitor. That's right. And I can't do that. So I want that. So I don't know. I'm probably, I mean, it's $99. That's the thing.
It's cheap enough. Like, I'm like, you know, I was willing to wait a couple days after Amy's birthday to get her the Apple TV.
Right. But that one, if they come out with a new one that you spent $99, you're not going to freaking, like, you know, kill yourself.
No, I'll probably just buy the new one.
Exactly.
You know, I'd be like, "Oh, okay. Well, we'll take this old one and we'll put it in the other room for something, and we'll get a new one."
Exactly. That's all you're gonna do. Yeah. So, all right. Well, it's been a long, long podcast. So let's you know, I think we should wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. It's still not our longest.
Not our longest, but.
Anyway, let's thanks everybody for listening once again. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Abelsmay. Yvonne is at I am Bo. Follow him too. He needs it.
He's back.
You're back up to 12.
I actually saw two people follow me, not one additional followers, not just one.
Well, somebody must have left.
I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I'm moving up. I picked up a couple.
Oh, you're at 13. You are at 13 now. It was 12. Yeah, I told you. It was 12 earlier today when I checked.
I got more followers.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Hey, and my wife and daughter are now on Twitter too. I tweeted about them, so not that
they're doing anything. Cool.
But anyway, follow us, review us, tell your friends, send us comments. You know, all that crap. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. And if you have any other things to talk about, let us know. We take suggestions. We take requests.
We take anything, actually, lately. But anyway.
And donations, too. Feel free to send us donations. You know, I tweeted, I was checking out the new the Square Cash thing. You know, I tried just for the fun of it to, what is it? It actually is, it's Square Cash. You can find it. There's a app for your smartphone, or it's square.com/cash. It's to just send money back and forth to people, like individuals, no fee. Like, there's limits on how much you can send, but, like, you know, I could send you $5 to pay for dinner or whatever. And that's what it's for. And I tried it out by sending, I tried to send $5 to my wife and $5 to my daughter, because this is supposedly really, really stupid easy to do. Neither one of them, like, picked up the $5 and took it.
Oh.
But if anybody wants to send me anything, email address is abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Feel free to send me cash.
Oh, okay. Well,
you know, Yvonne, I will try to send you cash right after we end this show. See if you can actually pick up the money. Because, like, these guys didn't do it. I'm like, I just sent you $5.
Send me like a buck. Send me like a buck. See if it's, you know, there you go. We'll see if I can pick up a buck.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
50 cents.
50 cents. I'll probably forget to do it right now, actually, because I have to run. But I will do it soon. I will send you some money. And again, our listeners, feel free. Send away. Send away. But anyway, I'm teasing, obviously. Have a good week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.